Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick Van Zandt. Coming up in this episode, tree climbing and obscure sports.
You know, I pretty much immediately was drawn into the tree climbing part, not just the physical part, the groundwork, the chainsaw work, all that. Something about the working at height appealed to me. I lived it all year round. You know, for 20-some years, I competed at the World Championships, and all year round, I would think about it. I would tweak my gear. I would keep an eye out for new gear, and I would even create new techniques. And they always have these grand trees. Some of the most beautiful, majestic trees I've ever climbed were in competitions. You know, I could think of trees in Nashville to Hawaii to over in the UK, where Australia, where these trees are just magnificent. So
I want to thank you guys so much for joining us. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. So our first guest does something that we all have done. Everybody's climbed a tree pretty much, right? The difference is that he is one of the best in the world, if not at one time, the best in the world at climbing trees. And I think that he has this fascinating story, both in terms of what competitive tree climbing is, but also how somebody can just become really, really, really good at something that they're passionate about. This is three-time world champion tree climber, Mark Chisholm.
Was this something that you wanted to get into, or was this something that just kind of happened?
Well, you know, it kind of just happened. Every aspect of what I do is wrapped in tree care, arboriculture in some fashion. It really started when I was a young kid. I grew up in the industry. My father and mother had started our company, Aspen Tree Expert Company, here in New Jersey. So it was always kind of just like all around. And, you know, I pretty much immediately was drawn into the tree climbing part, not just the physical part, the groundwork, the chainsaw work, all that. Something about the working at height appealed to me. Maybe because my father did it, maybe just because of part of the nature that I have, or some of my tendencies as a child. I'm kind of always game to try things, you know, like if we're going to do like bicycle riding, we're going to try to hit jumps. If you take me skiing, I'm going to try to hit jumps. You know, it's kind of like I like the excitement aspect, I think, as well. But all that stuff appealed to me. And then, you know, there was a period in time not long after that where I graduated from high school and was trying to figure out whether I should stick with what I'm doing or move on down the road and try something else, just because, you know, I didn't really know anything else. I started doing a little bit of soul searching. And the funny thing about it all was I got my 2-year degree. And at that time, I had started getting involved in the tree climbing championships. But when I got involved in that, I saw the big picture of the industry around the world. I saw the camaraderie, and it just grabbed a hold of me at that point. And I realized, you know, I'm going to Rutgers to get a biology degree to maybe do this or that, that I'm not 100% sure of. And then it just hit me. I'm already doing what I really want to do, and I didn't really know it. I thought I was maybe taking the easy road or the easy way out, and, you know, didn't want to take that without doing a little bit of really kind of soul searching to make sure I was taking the right path for me, not just for anybody else.
So when you do the competition, are you competing in how fast you climb, how far? Like what is the competition centered around?
the one thing I'll tell everybody, because they always assume I'm doing timber sports, which is logging based, you know, chainsaw cutting and chopping and all that. And it's not. If I look at the two, they're a lot different in the idea that, yes, they share some similarities. But in the tree climbing championships, we don't use any axes. We don't use any chainsaws. It's all climbing, and it's as close as you can get to rock climbing in trees if you can visualize rock climbing, and you'll get a picture. But there's six events, and it's both. Two of them are just speed. The difference between the two is one is you just climb the rope and nothing else, and it's 15 meters, so about 50 feet. And the other event is called the Blade Speed Climb. Somebody at the ground is belaying you, just like in a rock climbing situation. And that event will go from different heights based on the trees in the geographical zone that we're in. For example, when we were in out in Seattle, Washington, that climb was in a sequoia, and we had a climb of like 94 feet or something, which was a really fun one. But that's all speed. First one at the top of the tree hits the bell, and you win that event if you're the fastest without any infractions. And so that's one that actually appeals to me as well, because I like the agility aspects.
Now, are you climbing like the main part of the tree? Like, or are you climbing up the branches, or is it just however you get up? Yeah. Is however you get up?
You can utilize the rope that's going to your anchor point in the top of the tree, and you can utilize that rope if there's nothing to grab onto, or you use the tree however you see fit. So limb work and all that is what we do. We don't climb with spikes because they're not good for trees unless you're doing a removal. So this is not to kind of emulate what you would do in a removal. It's more about tree climbing and pruning and preservation of trees.
Do you have, I mean, is there a special gloves, special shoes, anything like that?
Yes and no. We do have gloves and boots that we use in tree climbing that it's not really unique to tree climbing per se. They make them for other industries, but they do work well for us. It's not like gloves. Like, for example, I'm a big fan of those rubber coated palm gloves because they give you a really good grip on rope and then everything else you touch. The shoes that I always chose were in a class or a category they call approach shoes. A mix between a boot and a rock climbing shoe, because they're not for wall climbing, but they're for getting to the wall, which have a kind of a stickier sole. And, you know, they're more like a boot looking, but they're flexible and sticky.
All right. So this is what I'm kind of imagining necessarily. Like, you know, you and the guys, you and the coworkers, like, how do you go from, hey, you know, he's pretty good at this to like, wow, you should compete in this, right? How do you go from being kind of the good guy in the neighborhood to being a world champion? Like, how do you know that you're at that level?
You know, I don't know that you do know. For me, I didn't know. You know, back when I started the competition, I just turned 18, was going to be 19, and by the time I did my first one, and the guys I worked with who were just starting to do it, like mentors of mine, said, you should try it. You'd like it because you're competitor. When I was young, I did soccer for 5 years, I did wrestling for 3 years, and I always enjoyed the competition aspect. But then I started working at such a young age. I never played football. I never continued with wrestling in high school or any of that. So it kind of brought me back to that thing I felt like I missed out on, because I chose to do tree work and worked on Saturdays. I missed out on kind of the sports and the competitions and such. So this kind of appealed to me on that level. But to answer your question, I had no idea if I was good enough to compete against anyone. And it really didn't matter to me, to be honest with you. It was more about participating. And the guys around me said, just come, show up, you'll have a great time. You'll learn stuff. You're going to go home feeling glad you did it, even if you come in last. And that felt like a no-lose scenario. And my first competition in New Jersey, at the New Jersey Championship, I placed fifth overall over, I want to say there was like 25 competitors then, which was a pretty good showing. But I really made some big mistakes for me personally, where I felt like I was sloppy and I was a little embarrassed by my showing. And everybody supported me and said, no, you did great. What are you talking about? But I knew what I did wrong. And it kind of fueled me to want to come back and show myself that I could clean that up and do better and learn these other parts of the competition. I didn't really notice scoring, for example. So it was a process, but I didn't know if I'd be good at it. And it wasn't until the second year in New Jersey, where I took second to the guy who was the champion the year prior and that year. And I got close to him and I started watching and learning, and people would share things that I really said, you know, I think I could probably do pretty good at this, but it wasn't with any like monster goals or dreams. I just wanted to come back and do better than the year prior.
What, why are you good at it though? Is it a physical thing? Like, do you identify a path well? Like, what about you makes you good at it?
You know, there's a lot of ways to answer that, because there's a lot of different components that I think you need to understand to get good at any event, including this one. So I think obviously physical ability has a lot to do with it, because you're doing a physical thing. You need to have agility. You need to have upper body strength. You need to have balance and all these different things you would need for any real athletic event. But I think you've got to learn how to also be kind of mentally able or mentally strong in the competition arena, because it's just you against yourself and everybody else. You know, it's not a team event. You have to go in there and know that whatever happens is your fault. Whether you do good or bad is up to you. And if you're not happy with that, then you need to prepare better. Preparing means physically. Preparing means mentally. Preparing can mean learning the event, learning how you can get better scores, watching what other people did around you that were better than you in each event so you can draw from that. And then maybe for me personally, what helped me excel is I think I was very passionate about it, and I lived it all year round. You know, for 20-some years, I competed at the World Championships, and all year round, I would think about it. I would tweak my gear. I would keep an eye out for new gear, and I would even create new techniques that I wanted to showcase at the event if I got the opportunity. And I think that wholehearted, all-inclusive submersion in the event while I'm at work, while I'm at home, on Sundays, practicing and thinking about it is what drove me to become better. That, and you know, the people around me brought me up in that each year I would compete, I would watch and learn and gather from everyone around me. And if they got better, I somehow got better. And it made me say, I can't be this level next year, or I'm going to be left in the dust. So I need to get better even from here on out. And every year it was a push to get better.
Are you all, is everybody on the same tree, or do you climb different trees? Because I feel like one tree might be easier than the other tree necessarily, right?
Yeah, no, we all follow the same track. Every event is identical for everybody. I'll give you the general kind of aspect of the event. There's five preliminary events. Everybody competes in those five preliminary events that add up a total point score. And you can win or lose every single one of those events by itself. But you gather points if you point place in anything across the whole board. And as you participate in all five, at the end of that day, the top five men and at the time the top three women would go on and compete in one more event the next day, called the Masters Challenge, which is one event. And everybody does the same tree, but you have freedom to do it any way you want, meaning every station you can go in any order you want, use any gear you want, as long as it's safe and approved and best practice.
What's kind of your basic strategy? Like when you approach the tree, what do you have? What's your strategy going into it?
You know, what I always try to do, and I was not always successful at this event where I probably could have been. Looking back now, I think I let things change my judgment based on what I was thinking at the time. But looking back, I see a little differently now. And I think what the real kind of blessing, if you will, is if you can see how to solve that climb or solve that puzzle, so to speak, utilizing your best attributes, your best skills, rather than doing it like someone else did in the past or would do because you think they're the best climber or they had the best climb last year and they beat you doing a certain way. I think when I did the best is when I walked into that event and said, I'm just going to do my climb like I see the best way to climb this tree, not factoring in anything other than what I see for this tree.
Do they rate the trees on a difficulty level, kind of like rock climbing is?
I actually thought of that myself years ago. We talked about that idea of doing different ratings. But what they actually do is we typically move around to a city anywhere in the world that it's kind of like it's kind of like the Olympics where they plan it like 4 years out, you know, where you're going to be for the next 4 years. And it goes to a place that typically has some beautiful parks, natural areas where they can host this event. And they always have these grand trees. Some of the most beautiful, majestic trees I've ever climbed were in competitions. You know, I could think of trees in Nashville to Hawaii to over in the UK where Australia, where these trees are just magnificent. So the Masters Challenge is never going to be the easiest tree in the park. It's always going to be the largest, most technical tree that you can imagine. And the guys and women that create the climbs are tend to be some of the best world champion, ex-champion climbers that, that help set these up. So they make them very challenging and difficult. So in the simplest answer is they'll put it at the highest level of difficulty that the tree and the parks will allow in the region we're in. So they're always a very difficult climb.
Can people make a living off of this?
Not really. Some people travel around and do competitions. So just competing alone will not really get you a very good income. I mean, it varies year to year, but you can go around and win thousands of dollars at each regional event and in prizes and cash. So like I remember some world championships in particular that I won where maybe I walked away with around $5,000 or plus in cash and prizes. And so that's not really a big payday, but what is kind of really the payday for most of us is you get a free ride to some place in the world to be part of this event. You get a free ride to the educational components and you get to see everybody and participate and it doesn't cost you a dime. Everything's covered, travel inclusive. So that's the real payout for most people to get to that level and be part of the event and not have to come out of pocket on it. And if you win something, it's just, you know, great. Thank you. And it's great to have that extra. But I think, like for people like myself, what ends up paying more bills in the long run is when you become of value to, you know, the industry because of your credentials. And some of those may be based on the competition as well. For example, you know, a brand ambassador to some organization or company that says, we think you're a good fit for us, and they'll pay you to do whatever, advertising, marketing, or education.
Are you ready for some of the listener / harder questions?
Absolutely.
Best type of tree to climb?
Wow. So for me, the best type of tree for me would be something that's in my wheelhouse where I felt like I excelled. And that would be a very large open tree. So you can imagine a very tall, very broad, majestic oak tree, for example, where there's a lot of room to limb walk and swing and jump. Because I'm a tall guy and athletic in the tree climbing event as at any rate. Maybe I'm not as athletic on the ground, you know, per se, but I'm pretty graceful in a tree where I can make a big jump, swing, movement, land it with grace. And I think that makes me feel more confident approaching those climbs. So something really big, really spread out with a lot of swings and dynamic movements appeals to me, where maybe other people are intimidated by that climb and they prefer something, you know, more dense and with a lot of limb structure.
Wait a minute. You're like jumping from limb to limb?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's actually, you know, you asked me, what makes a good master climb something that you know, to me is a good master's climb. One of the things I loved is when I walked up and saw the tree for the first time and scoped out the routes that they set up, if I could see a really dynamic jump or swing that I knew because of my athletic ability and my height and reach that I could create something that maybe other people would struggle with, which would be unique to me. And it would make other people who, you know, at the end of the day, if you're watching a world championship event, what you want to be is if you're an arborist, a tree climber from wherever you are in the world and you've never done this, you want to see something that impresses you, just like when you watch professionals do anything, right? And I tried to approach the climbs like that. Like I wanted to do something that shows the highest level of climbing that I could provide. And that's what I looked for. So I love the jumps. I love the big swings. And I kind of developed a name for it in that regard.
I mean, obviously there's safety precautions, but people can get hurt doing this, right? Have you ever gotten hurt?
Yeah, unfortunately you can get hurt. Luckily for me, I've not had more than bumps and bruises with the exception of maybe one smashed knee in Baltimore because, you know, it was raining earlier in the day. The trees were slippery and I still went for these dynamic moves and I just kind of didn't land it as solidly as I normally would, smack my knee and had to finish the competition with a sore, stiff knee that didn't really inhibit anything, but it definitely took my mind space a little bit. But there were a few people that have gotten hurt, made a mistake that wasn't something you could see happening, you know, wasn't something that was, you know, the judge's fault or anything else. The climber made an error and had to get rescued themselves from the event and brought to the hospital, but nothing too drastic on the world championship event. At some of the regionals, I've heard of some more difficult injuries that have happened, which is obviously something we try to avoid.
Worst type of tree to climb?
The worst type of tree to climb? For me, it depends. If you're talking competition, I don't want anything that's real, like, brittle, where they don't allow you to tie in high and use that high tie-in point to pivot from. If the tree's real brittle as far as the type of wood it is, they'll limit how high in the tree we're allowed to tie in, which is the smart thing to do, but it limits what I can do as a climber to showcase my skills. So I hated those. I also hate trees that have thorns and such that slow your movement down. But in the workplace, by far, the thing I hate the most is like a tree covered in vines that is really overgrown because it just restricts all everything you need to do. Nothing but problems.
Is there, like, I don't know very much about trees, but to people who compete in this, will they like, oh no, it's a birch tree or it's an elm or like,
yeah.
Will they look at it and say like,
we've been there. Yeah. Actually, in Toronto, 1 year they did this beautiful spot, where we climbed on an island outside of the city. We had to take a ferry over at sunrise. It was a great magical event, but the trees on the island were limited. And they had to hold it in this really large scale willow tree, and willows are very brittle, you know, so a lot of us were like, we're climbing willows, you know, it's kind of a disappointment, but we all enjoyed the event, nonetheless, but if we isolate the trees, we didn't really love those trees.
Is there a place, like, what's the tree climber's mecca? Like, man, you gotta go to...
Well, I think it differs for everybody, but I bet a lot of us will be consistent in that we want to climb the biggest trees in the world. So for me, going out to California and climbing redwoods was like my pinnacle. You know, that's kind of like the Everest of trees, so to speak.
Can you look at a tree without planning out how to climb it?
No, you can't. That's not happening. Honestly, you can't go somewhere on vacation and not catch yourself looking at trees and looking at how, wow, that would be fun to climb or that would be miserable to climb. And yeah, no, you can't do that.
Best way to slip "I'm a world champion tree climber" into a conversation?
You can't. You know what it is? It's always awkward when people ask you what you do. I look at whoever's with me and they roll their eyes and they're like, all right, how do we explain this one? You know, it ends up being a long conversation. It's just like when you said, tell me what the world championships of tree climbing are about. Well, it's easiest if I show you a YouTube video, you search it, and you can see for yourself, but it's a long discussion. It's not a two-second answer, so you can't slip it in, you know, but it does come up when people do ask, or they ask, they dig a little bit, and you eventually you can't avoid it.
This one, kind of along those lines, have you ever used it to help in the romantic arena / are there tree climbing groupies?
That's a good question. So for me, there's no tree climbing groupies that matter to me. I'm a married man for actually just celebrating my anniversary for 25 years now. My wife, and actually I met her because of the world championships.
Oh, cool.
Because I was in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and after the event was over that night is when I met her early that night, and it's a long story after that, but eventually she ended up being my wife, so yeah, it could happen. But she was not impressed by tree climbers or tree climbing. That's not what worked for me. But I definitely think there's some people that think that it works for them. I've heard them talk about it, but I don't know about that.
Is there, okay, let me ask you this one other kind of question.
Sure.
Is there like, okay, so I'll take myself for example. My oldest son is 4. He's starting to really get into the, you know, he's climbing trees. I'm old enough where I can't possibly keep up with him. Is there any tip that you can give me that, like, I can show him the old man still knows what's up? Like, what's your best
oh, yeah,
novice tree climbing,
yeah,
tip?
So for I would tell you a couple. One is don't get too carried away, because once you start getting up, know your limitations and don't get too crazy unless you're going to learn how to climb with a rope and a harness, because us professionals, we're not allowed to leave the ground without being tied in at all times now. Try to keep 3 points of contact when you're doing that, you know, meaning 2 feet and an arm or 2 arms and a feet, because that way you have good stability. And if you're reaching on smaller diameter branches, say things for the general sake of not knowing the species and such, say 3-inch diameter and until you hit larger than that, you want to stay close to the tree trunk where it meets. Don't reach really like 4 foot out and grab on. That's when you break those branches. So that's when it gets more risky. So staying close and try to maintain 3 points of contact, and you don't have a lot to worry about until you get over that height of, well, say, I don't know, let's say 15 feet, it becomes deadly if you slip.
That's pretty much all the questions I got, man. Anything else you think that we missed, and what's coming up next for you?
Well, you know, I mean, I could talk about tree climbing and the industry at large for forever. It's just such a great industry. So I will say that, you know, what I find is that the industry is unlike anything else out there. There's a camaraderie, there's a brotherhood, a sisterhood that reaches internationally. And what I mean is, you don't have to have real connections anywhere. All you have to do is reach out, say, I'm an arborist from so-and-so, I'd love to come see your operation or spend a day. And everybody welcomes you in for the most part and wants to see you. You can work anywhere in the world in this trade in a matter of a heartbeat, on a whim, so to speak. And that's what it's all about.
I want to thank Mark so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, we have linked to him on our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on Twitter and Instagram. And we have also included his information on the RSS feed that's on this podcast. If you want to know about anything related to trees or arboriculture, man, I mean, he knows a lot about trees. I don't know anything about trees. So it's actually really kind of fascinating to check out his website if you get a chance.
Okay, now let's go ahead and give John Shull a call.
Howdy-ho, neighborino.
Were you a good tree climber as a kid?
Of course not. I couldn't even climb the rope in elementary school.
Like not even off the ground a little bit? Like how far up the rope could you get?
I would put my feet on the knot, you know, the bottom knot, and I would say, this is a funny story, actually. I would pretend to climb to the top, thinking the gym teacher, Mr. Leanhouse, at the time, wouldn't notice, and I would, like, wiggle the rope and then jump down and be like, oh, I made it to the top.
Oh, so you were trying to fool him, like, when his back was turned. You would just be like, ooh, 40 reps, good set.
But... you know, looking back on it, of course he didn't believe me because most kids couldn't do it, you know, in 10 seconds, let alone me doing it in 10 seconds.
I'm pretty sure he could look at you and be like, "That he didn't climb that rope. He didn't climb the rope."
Thinking of climbing the rope, I mean, that's kind of dangerous if you really think about it, having a bunch of little kids climbing a rope 20, 30 feet and then back down.
These kids are going to die. Like climbing a rope, basically you climb the 30-foot rope with a 3-inch mat, and that was going to be fine if you fell from the top.
Or those twirly things, you know, that you can spin really fast on. Like, those are death traps waiting to happen.
Okay, but what thing in gym class did you excel in?
You know, I was always good at dodgeball or anything that had to do with throwing and catching balls.
Yeah, you were. I was actually.
Why do you always have to take it to that level, and then you make me think of taking it to that level, and it ruins anything I just said?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Anyways, I was very good at dodgeball. I was also very good, believe it or not, at like the bear crawls and things.
Wait, were you good at dodgeball because of the dodging, or because of the throwing, or because of the catching?
I'm not the smallest person. And I've never been the smallest person, but I'm a pretty good thrower, and I'm a good catcher too. Anyways, but beyond that, I was really good at the bear crawls. Remember the crab walks? Those were sons of bitches, but I seemed to be okay at that.
But you were probably popular enough that, like, no, don't get John right now. Like, let him get to the second round at least.
I will say this, that I was never picked first, second, third, or fourth for basketball ever. But when it came to dodgeball, I was always one of the first kids picked. Because I was actually pretty good.
We didn't call it dodgeball because I went to one of those schools where they're like, we can't play dodgeball anymore. It's too aggressive. Call it spider ball. It was exactly the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. They just called it something else. Like, no, we don't play dodgeball. We play bombardment. Oh, okay. That's fine. Carry on, kids.
It was a lot of fun, though. I kind of miss the old dodgeball days.
I'd love to play dodgeball again, honestly. I'd be terrible at it, but I'd love to play it again. But anyway, we've been talking about this too much. Let's move on. What's your thing?
My thing. Let's give some shout-outs. I was working on that. I hope you liked it.
Not very long. Not long enough.
All right. Jill Flatman, appreciate you. Jordan, Oliva, Irene, Charles Lloyd, thank you all for checking us out on Twitter this past week. Heading over to the Instagram, Victor Easton, Brennan Sutcliffe, Dakota, Toby, and Michael Ferguson. Appreciate all you guys checking us out on the gram.
Oh my God, don't say that.
You know what? I wasn't going to. I only did it because I knew you were just waiting for it, and I fed it to you.
Is Dakota spelled, how is Dakota spelled? Like the state, or do they spell it with like an interesting way?
No, I like Dakota. I like the state.
Okay, that's appropriate. I'm okay with that name as long as it's spelled correctly. If you're going to be Dakota, D-A-K-K-O-T-A, I don't even know how to spell Dakota. D-A-K-O-T-A?
Oh, boy. Aren't you a history? Like, aren't you a geography guy?
Oh, I didn't realize that. Well, no. Obviously not. How do you spell Dakota? D-A-K-O-T-A?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. All right. Well, let's move on.
All right. Let's see here. Would you rather work with a person who is a complete asshole or a person who is just a compulsive liar?
I don't really know what the difference is.
Say the asshole is a person who's just rude every day. Hard to work with, you know. Not a team player, things like that, but they're not a liar. Where the liar is what it is. Somebody who might be nice to your face, might be a good teammate, but you always got to be worried about them backstabbing you or undermining you, things like that.
Oh, I'd take the liar. I don't mind
really?
It when people. I don't mind it when people are mean to me behind my back. I could care less. Like, I just want to get through the day, right? Like, if you're completely fake with me, I could, that's fine. I could care less, right? Like, let's just get this over with. If you're not difficult to work with, I think it's harder to work with someone's difficult. I mean, you can say whatever you want behind my back. You can say it to my face. I don't care. Let's just get this over with. I don't want to be here. You don't want to be here.
You can either be rich and ugly or poor and good looking.
Oh, rich and ugly. That's easy.
Poor. Yeah, I agree with you.
Nobody wants to be poor and good looking. That's not getting anybody. Hey, tell me all those about those movie stars who are poor and good looking.
I agree with you. You have to defend yourself in a battle. Are you taking a sword or a pair of nunchucks?
Well, a sword. Although I would say, though, honestly, like if I had one person running at me with a sword and one person running at me with nunchucks, I'd be more afraid of the person with nunchucks. But I think the sword is ultimately going to be more effective, right? Because the nunchucks might scare you a lot because you don't know what's going on. But if they hit you, it might not be fatal. You get hit with a sword, that's probably going to hurt a lot, right?
I would almost argue the stupid fact of getting beat with nunchucks would feel a lot worse than a sword because a sword's just going to, you know, slice your arm off, right? It's going to be all shock. That's where the nunchucks are going to hurt like a motherfucker.
I'm not worried about getting hurt. I'm worried about dying.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that's the truth. I wasn't really thinking about dying. I was just thinking about, like, the, you know, getting beat or have something chopped off.
Yeah, dude, they'd probably try to kill you with a sword. I mean, I don't know if you have ever heard of how war works, but generally it's not just to injure your opponent, call it a good game, and then shake hands and walk away. Like, they generally, people die.
Listen, are you still keeping your sword in your car or what?
Yeah, so for people who've never heard this before, I bought a ninja sword drunk one night. It's actually a pretty badass ninja sword. Used it to cut fruit, basically drunken stupidity with it. It got banned from the household because now I have two children. Apparently they can't have a ninja sword, according to my wife. So now it sits in my car.
I mean, it's, you know, and in all honesty, and I love that sword. I'm pretty sure I've chopped things up with it before. It's probably better not to be in your house. I have to side with your wife on this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a better idea. Are you ready for are we at our top five already?
Yeah, and I'm interested. Let's do it. I'm excited. I'm ready to go. Woo!
Okay, that was a good one. That was nice.
Thanks.
That was nice.
Thanks.
All right. So our top five is top five obscure sports. And I'm generally thinking about stuff that, right, because we've heard of extreme ironing, but I don't feel like that counts. Like, it has to have been on TV at some point, right? That's the level of obscurity that we're talking about. But it obviously can't be football, baseball, basketball. What's your number five?
Cheese rolling.
No, are you fucking serious? That's my number five, too.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I, like you, was also going with my list of things that I've actually seen on TV. And be damned, I've seen people rolling gigantic wheels of cheese down a hill in England every year.
It's pretty awesome, honestly, just to watch those people. You're basically just watching for people to get hurt. Like, nobody even knows what's the even goal of the sport, because you're not beating the cheese. Like, you're just trying to be the first person down? You're trying not to die?
Yeah, from what I understand, you're trying to get your wheel of cheese down the hillside to the imaginary finish line first?
Well, I don't think that's how it works. I think they roll the cheese, and then you're trying to be the first person down there, and the first person down there gets the cheese. But everybody's seen this thing, right? It's where all these people go falling down a hill like idiots.
They really do look like idiots, but I mean, let's be honest. I would try it, for sure.
I mean, you would think that just by walking, you could probably beat most people who've fallen and hurting themselves.
Yeah, I feel like if you're in that, I feel like whether or not, like, common sense is gone, right? You have to jump and fall down the hill. No walk. Don't be that guy.
Couldn't you just roll down? I feel like rolling down would be relatively safe. I would hope that they would kind of clean the rocks off of the course. That seems a little bit dangerous.
For some reason, they probably don't. But there probably aren't a lot of rocks in that hillside anyways.
Right. We know a lot about geography here. Don't even question us. What's your number four?
How do you spell Dakota? Jolly ball, which is a combination of juggling and volleyball.
I've never even heard of that. What do you?
Yeah, so basically, it's we know what juggling is. You know how volleyball is played. If you don't, I'm not going to waste your time. Either way, when you get hit the ball, you have to like juggle it in the air a couple of times before you send it back.
Oh, wait, are there more than one ball involved? Like, are there multiple balls? Because
I saw it on TV a long time ago. There was four balls in play when I watched it a while ago. I don't know if that's changed. I didn't look it up. If it's changed, but I'm just sitting there wide. Like, I didn't even know what to watch. Like, which side of the court to watch? Because everything was just like happening all at once.
Okay, seems like a relatively hard sport to know who won. I'm like, man, can you imagine being the scorekeeper? Like, Jesus. I don't know. There's eight balls out there. I don't know who served. Like, this is too much work, man. That's too much
complicated
work.
Complicated statistics are not part of that sport, I guarantee it.
No. My number four is slam ball. Remember slam ball? They jumped off trampolines. It's like basketball with trampolines.
Yeah. As a kid, as an adult, like, I'd play some slam ball.
I'd love to go out there. That's one of those things, though, that like you think you'd love to go out there, and then you actually go out there, and you're like, holy shit, this is really high and dangerous. Shouldn't be doing this at all.
That's a good one, man. That's that was like its own actual TV show, I think, for a while, too.
They had a league. They had teams. Okay, cool. Did anybody ever shoot it, or was dunking the only thing that was allowable? Because wouldn't you just stand near the rim? That's what I would do.
Listen to you with your, you know, point guard mindset. Did anyone ever spot up and just shoot a two-pointer?
Did anybody just have a nice fundamental layup? Maybe, no, like, you don't even have to slap the backboard. Don't slap the backboard. You don't have to show off. Do a nice little layup. Towel off. Get back to the other side.
Easy. Towel off. Jesus Christ.
I don't know if you got a towel off. What's your number three?
So I'm competitive eating.
Okay, that's pretty legitimate. Right.
Right, and like it's obscure, but I feel like we act like it's normal because, you know, they have such big competitions now. But I mean, a dude put or a woman putting down like 12 pounds of ribs in 10 minutes, like that's fucking amazing still.
My only issue with competitive eating is it's a sport where I can only watch the first probably 20 seconds and then just tell me who won. Right? I don't actually want to, like, okay, if it's a 5-minute challenge, I don't really want to watch the whole 5 minutes. Right? I want to see how they're doing it. I want to marvel for a second. And then I want to, like, okay, guess I'll look up who won later.
Oh, man, once again, it's one of those things to where, like, I watch and I'm like, I could probably do that. I could probably put down 30 hot dogs in 10 minutes. And then when I, you know, when I might have 3 or 4 or 5 and on 4th of July, I'm like, there's no way I could do that.
No. What food are you most interested watching people eat? What food are you least interested watching people eat? Like, they have all these different competitions. It can't be because somebody's like, you know what? They're eating pudding, and I'm just not a fan of watching competitive eating with pudding. But I do love it when they eat corn dogs.
So I got to be boring, and I have to say the one that I don't want to watch is the hot dogs. Because it's like, kind of like what you were saying, but on a different level. I can only watch the first couple of minutes, and then when they start getting everything soggy and wet pieces of bread are flying everywhere and it's coming out their mouth, like, that's really gross to me. So I'm going to pick that. The one that I could watch, the chicken wing eating contests, are fascinating.
Okay, what's the preferred chicken wing strategy? Do they eat the whole wing, or do they do that thing where, like, they bite it at the end and then just rip it off like they're sucking out the marrow?
I hope people know what you just said. I got it.
I think people know. I think people understand.
Yeah, that's the preferred if you're doing, you know, if you're doing straight wings without, you know, without the drumstick. They just stick them in their mouth and then they just suck the meat off, and it's like they break it, pop the bones, and there's one down.
Is that what you would do?
Yeah, I would try to do that. I don't know if I have enough. Don't know if I have enough suction, but I'm sure I could learn how to do it.
Yeah, you got to work the jaw more. That's your problem.
What's your number three before this goes somewhere I don't want it to go?
I don't know if this quite counts as obscure, but the hammer throw in track and field. That just looks... I'm just waiting for somebody to die. Right?
I'm surprised. I'm sure there are stories of people getting hurt. There has to be.
That has to have been people killed in that sport. Right? You're taking... I think it's... I'm just going to say it's a 20-pound hammer. Swinging it around with a giant person and then just chucking it down into a field while other events are going on all around it. Like, there's no way no one's died in this. There's none.
The only thing that I can think of and compare it to, so people kind of get an idea of how dangerous, is like the javelin throw in track.
But the javelin, you know, generally, that's probably going to go. There's no way that somebody's going to throw that javelin behind them on accident or to the side on accident. Like, these are professional athletes. But what if somebody just chucks this hammer throw to the side because they're spinning around in a circle? Like, this just can't be a good idea.
Yeah, that's true. And right, that backstop or whatever, that net only goes so far to the left and the right. Yeah, I agree with you. That's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, and for people who haven't seen it, it's basically like a mesh golf ball net. What's that going to do to stop a 20-pound hammer? I have no idea.
People like us must have came up with that safety feature.
I want to know who the per... Like, how could you be good at the hammer throw and not good at the shot put?
I can add nothing to this conversation because I haven't done either, so...
Okay, all right. Fair enough. What's your number two?
Zorba ball.
Is that the one where they put people inside the balls and they just bash into each other, those big plastic things? Yeah, that's a good sport.
Yeah, like... I think they actually have a Zorball soccer league, but it looks so, I mean, I would try it, but I don't understand getting inside of that. And then, like, you just get the shit kicked out of you, and you go upside down and stuff. It just doesn't look appetizing to me, but people love it, so.
Okay. Reminds me of that Earth Ball game where they had a giant ball, you tried to push it across certain places.
Yeah.
Which basically just turned into a fight. Over the ball. All right, so it's basically a wrestling match with a ball in there and everybody getting a fight and then somebody pushed the ball. Okay, all right. Sounds good. Let's do it. My number two is curling, man. There's something about it. It's hypnotic.
See, I wouldn't classify that as an obscure sport, though.
You think it's too high profile?
Yeah, I mean, to me, anything, well, as I'm thinking on the fly, anything that's an Olympic sport to me, even like the hammer throw, is not that obscure. Like, for instance, on my honorable mention, I have car curling.
Oh, what? Somebody pushes the car? I can understand that. I mean, I consider it to be pretty obscure because you're only going to see it once every 4 years.
I'm not trying to give my state some love. Shout out to all you Michiganders out there that listen. But, like, we have multiple curling clubs just in my area that meet regularly.
Have you gone to them?
No, but I kind of want to. There is a bar downtown Detroit, Thomas McGee, shout out. They do a trip every like year, or used to before COVID, where you pay a certain amount of money and you go to a Canadian curling club across the river. And you know, I've done that. That's fun.
Oh, you actually went to the curling club?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Did you beat the Canadians? Did you represent for the United States?
No, I don't believe so. No.
Yeah. They probably
that
take it a
many,
little.
That was many years ago. I assume he still does it. I don't even know.
So. Okay. All right. Well, that's you check on that and get back to us because we're all really curious. What's your number one?
My number one, drum roll, which I won't do, is wife carrying.
I've seen that before. I really thought you were going to go with something else. I was like, wait a minute. How, that shouldn't be a sport. Oh, wife curling. Wife carrying, that makes more sense.
Yeah, wife carrying. I mean, I think it's done once or twice every year, and I just, you know, some of these poor guys, either they're not strong enough, or, you know, there's a certain kind of rhythm that you have to be in, and they're not in it, and, you know, it just, I don't know, I'm fascinated by it. I never turn it off when I see it.
I think that's the kind of sport where, like, somebody's feelings are going to get hurt if somebody's not good. Because either the man's not strong enough or the woman needs to lose a little bit of weight, right? If somebody's feel like, hey, why didn't we win this year, honey? I don't know. Why don't you lift some weight? I don't know. Why don't you stop eating ice cream and maybe we will? Like the loser, I'm going to go ahead and out on a limb and say that the people who are serious about that competition and lose, there's a 100% chance there's an argument after they lose.
What's more fascinating after the statistics?
After
how many couples are now divorced because of this competition?
Right. I mean, that's one of those things when you lose, somebody's taking it pretty personally. My number one is slap fighting.
That's a good one. And that's relatively new, right? That's where basically they just slap each other in the face till they knock one or each other out.
You have to be like, what's the draw there other than you want to hit somebody, right?
I don't know if that's made its way to America yet. I believe it's like a Russian thing right now. But it'll get here soon. And then we'll maybe have a professional slap fighter on.
We could. That's a good idea, actually. But why not just punch? Like, why not just take an arm punch? I'd much rather. Would you rather be slapped in the face or punched in the arm?
I mean, punched in the arm. I don't think anyone would choose, you know, being slapped in the face over that.
Is a backhand illegal? I've never seen somebody backhand.
Oh my god. Yeah, I've never seen backhanded either. I've
only seen a forward slap.
But you know, to be honest, watching that, a lot of it's open palm, and I always feel like they get the meat of their hand on the person's face. Like, it's never like an actual like slap. Like, it's almost like an open-handed punch.
That makes sense, right? There has to be some sort of rule. I feel like it should be a slap, right? Like, the hand needs to be cupped a little bit, and there needs to be more fingers than bottom of palm. Because you're basically just palm striking somebody. I don't actually know what a palm strike is, but I have watched Kung Fu movies before.
In a weird way, you kind of do look like Chuck Norris.
I've never heard that before. I can't grow nearly that much chest hair, though.
All right, before this completely gets off the rail, some of my honorable mentions, I have chess boxing, I mentioned car curling, toe and thumb wrestling. That's just weird to me. I wanted to put beer pong on my list, but I feel like that's not obscure enough anymore. So
Yeah.
It didn't get on there. And then I put on cricket racing, because apparently that's a sport, like in Australia, which I had no idea. And then I also have sandbag racing, which does not look like fun at all. So
what is sandbag racing?
So I actually watched a YouTube clip. It's whoever can carry the most amount of sandbags at the same time, 20 feet.
Oh, so it's like a meathead sport.
Yeah. It's like I watched a guy like carry 8 or something, which you think it's not a lot, but imagine like the width of your shoulders to be able to carry that many sandbags at once.
I mean, depending on how heavy the sandbag is, I would imagine it's at least 20 pounds, 20 to 50. I mean, that's 160 pounds. If they're 50-pound sandbags, that's 400 pounds, which would be incredible. Is he a really big guy?
Yeah, he was the guy that I watched was a big guy, like a big guy.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's like carrying a Nick Van Zandt on your shoulders. Maybe two of you.
Probably two of me, honestly. I have, like, I don't know, now that maybe you're redefining what obscure is, but maybe some of these don't count, but I had ping pong, badminton, that highlai sport where they have, like, what looks like, I don't know what it even is, attached to their arm, and they just whip this ball down this down this giant court.
I'm pretty sure Jackass, the fellas at Jackass, made that sport famous.
That just looks like it would hurt a lot.
Because I think they get thrown at like 100 miles an hour, and of course these idiots were getting full on, hitting the nuts, hitting the back with these balls going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, that sounds awful. I wouldn't even do that. I also had baseball on there.
Baseball?
Oh yeah, nobody cares about that. Is it even on TV? Did they even play a World Series this year? I would see competitive trolling, like who controls someone else the best.
About baseball, because you were wrong.
Nobody cares about baseball. I don't care.
Just because you grew up in an area that didn't have a TV doesn't mean there wasn't baseball on.
Who did win? I don't even know.
The Dodgers won.
Where are they at?
Los Angeles.
Okay. I do like that one sport, though, where they ski and then shoot stuff. That's always kind of cool.
The biathlon?
I think it is actually the biathlon. Nice job. Nicely done.
I watched the Olympics.
Oh, fuck. That didn't even happen this year, right?
No, they didn't. They were moved. It's the Summer Olympics this time, but they were moved until next year.
Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you guys so much for joining us. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. Let us know what your favorite obscure sport is. I mean, there's tons of them. And it's just crazy to me to think that there is somebody out there in the world that is just incredibly good at something that I've never even heard of or maybe even thought of. That's amazing to me. Let us know what you're good at. If you're not good at anything, well, neither am I.